truth is reality. The connection is you. Check out Catherine Buckley on Truth Connections Radio, Thursday night at 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, right here on 107.7 FM, the Paranormal Radio Network.
Of the southern states. The day Elvis passed away would be our national holiday. If the South would have won, we'd have had it made. I'd make my Supreme Court down in Texas, and we wouldn't have no killers getting off free. If they were proven guilty, then they would swing quickly instead of writing books and smiling on TV. President of the Southern States. The day young Skinner died, we'd show our Southern pride. If the South would have won, we'd have had it made. Whiskey made in Tennessee, and all the horses raised in those Kentucky hills. The national treasury would be in Tupelo, Mississippi, and I'd put Hank Williams' picture on $100 bills. I'd have all the cars made in the Carolinas, and I'd ban all the ones made in China. I'd have every girl child sent to Georgia to learn to smile and talk with that southern accent, it drives me wild. I'd have all the fiddles made in Virginia, 'cause they sure can make them sound so fine. I'm going up on Wolverton Mountain and see a Clifton Flowers and have a sip of his good old Arkansas wine. Hey, if the South would have won, we'd have had it made. Run for president of the southern state. When Patsy Cline passed away, that would be our national holiday. If the South would have won, we'd have had it made.
PM Eastern.
Exclusively on the UFO Paranormal Radio Network. We delve into UFOs, abductions, ghosts, aliens, conspiracies, and cryptozoology.
And how could you ever forget about those creepy topics you won't hear on your local news?
This is where I would insert my obligatory skeptical statement. The Mind Cemetery, where the paranoia about the paranormal comes to rest.
Follow us on Twitter and subscribe to us on Facebook. Also, check us out on our website, mindcemetery.com, for show updates and the critically acclaimed Mind Cemetery blog.
It's not critically acclaimed, but you should check it out anyway, mindcemetery.com.
Hi, I'm Stephanie Benetti, and along with Joe Montaldo, we host News on the Flip Side. Come join us every Saturday night at 7 p.m. Central for our three-hour program. We have opinions on everything, and we're not afraid to share them. False history gets made all day, every day. The truth of the new is never on the news, but you can find it here with News on the Flip Side. Remember, don't be politically correct. Just be correct. Join us.
Tune in to UFO Undercover, Wednesdays at 8 p.m. Eastern, with your host, Joe Montaldo, right here on the Paranormal Radio Network.
Welcome to another episode of The Dawn of Shades. I'm your host, Gia Scott, and tonight we've got the usual fantastic show lined up. First, here's the usual information. The best way to send me a question during the program is to use handy-dandy little Twitter. 140 characters, and boom, I will have it. At Gia Scott, G-I-A-S-C-O-T-T. You don't even have to use a capitalized letter. And bingo, it'll pop up on my screen, and I can work that question right into our conversation tonight. The second way to send in questions is to send them in via email, and that's to send them to giascott@exogenynetwork.com. That question will pop into my email, and I promise not to give out your real name or email address. So that's the second way you can do it. Both ways are super duper easy, and you don't have to worry about getting nerves about being on the air. So just send those questions in, and I will be happy to share them with our guests tonight. And don't forget, too, you can join our group on Facebook. That's a great way to get updates on the program, what's happening, where, and so forth and so on. And so the same day, you're going to get approved to join the group. If you go more than a day or two, send me a message, because sometimes all technology gets glitches. If you don't get approved, that means you got caught in a glitch. So just send me a message, and I'll get it all fixed for you. With that, we're going to move right on forward to our program tonight. Tonight, we're going to change paces a little bit, slow down, and let our inner child come out to play as we talk with another author. And I'm going to let her do her own introduction. So, Debbie, would you introduce yourself to the audience, please?
Oh, well, sure. Thank you so much, Gia, for having me. And I am the author of a book with a very long title, Amelia Frump and Her Peanut Butter-Loving Overactive Imagination. That is the first in the series of the Amelia Frump books, and my second book is a cookbook activity book, which is Amelia Frump and Her Peanut Butter Loving Overactive Imagination is Cooking Up a Peanut Butter Storm. And you can find both of the books through my publisher's website, which is Dancing with Bear Publishing Children's Line. It's dwbchildrensline.com. That's all one word. Or you can also find it on Amazon as well. If you want to know more about me, you can go to Debbie Ropolo, R-O-P-P-O-L-O, .weebly.com, or you can find me on Twitter at Debbie Ropolo.
Pretty simple. Pretty simple. Cool. So, Amelia
And sometimes her imagination gets her into trouble. But she also comes to find out that she can use her imagination, that she controls what's going on in her imagination. And so that's all about Amelia Frump.
Uh-huh. You know, when you think about nine-year-olds and writing for them, what made you decide to write a book about a nine-year-old girl?
Well, a lot of Amelia is based on my own adventures. Like I said, whenever I was younger, I had a very active imagination. And looking back on some of my shenanigans, I'm not surprised my mom has gray hair. I had up on the monkey bars at school and believing I could fly out, jump off the top of them. But I looked back on some of those wild adventures that I had, and I thought, well, why not share my adventures with other children? Why not show them that having a wonderful imagination is a good thing whenever you have a great imagination, you really don't need to watch a lot of TV. Either you can use your imagination or you can have your own adventure just by reading a book.
You know, I have to admit, I didn't watch a lot of TV when I was growing up. And then when my kids were growing up, we had no television reception. This is before digital satellite. So unless you could afford the big giant satellite dishes with the big giant bill, you just didn't have TV. You could watch VCR and play movies and whatnot, but you couldn't watch TV. And so they, you know, they played a lot outside, and so did I. I can remember my little sister, because I was the oldest. I had a younger brother and a younger sister. My sister and I were making mud pies. We had a bale of hay for our kitchen, create a whole kitchen just to bale of hay. So, you know, we had our bale of hay there, and we're making our mud pies and playing house like little girls will. So we hollered at my brother, come and get it. And he comes a-running just excited because there was something to eat. We had pie. So he takes a big bite of the mud pie, much to my sister's, my shock, and he spits it out in disgust, and he says, that's mud. And we're thinking, of course it is. But he wasn't into that imagination, I guess, because he was really upset because we had fed him mud pie. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. And I also noticed, too, I am the mother of two boys. And if you remember, whenever we were children, probably the same thing with your mother as well, they always told us, wait until you have children of your own.
Oh, yeah, they're going to give you 10 times what you gave me.
Oh,
that was the curse.
Exactly, exactly. And she was so right. I have two boys who I love dearly, but they are so active, and their imaginations are just through the roof. And now I completely understand why my mother had such strange looks on her faces, on her face sometimes whenever I would do things. And they're also another inspiration for me to sit down and write children's books. I also wanted them to share some of their adventures with the kids as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can remember some adventures that didn't turn out so well, like the hot air balloon experiment that involved the kitchen stove.
Oh, no.
Don't do that. We were fortunate. I found the fire before anything more than a stack of papers burned. But, wow. Yeah, what happened is my son, I don't know exactly what it involved other than it was a fork and a plastic bag in the gas stove. And I smelled something, came in the kitchen and said, what are you doing? Because he looked guilty. You know that look.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. And he must have been not much younger than Amelia Frump. Anyhow, I said, what are you doing? He said, nothing. And I looked around and I didn't see anything. Well, in his panic to get rid of the evidence, as he heard his mother coming, he had flicked it behind the trash can and onto a shelf that, unfortunately, the bottom shelf had a huge stack of some legal papers. Legal papers are apparently very flammable.
Oh.
Because they were smoldering away. And so I left the kitchen and went to whatever I was doing, and about 15 minutes later, I have got a lot of smoke. And, you know, no flames yet, but I've got a lot of smoke. And so now the frantic hunt is on because I know. I already looked in the trash can. Didn't see anything. And I said, okay, maybe, you know, maybe he really wasn't doing anything. He was just thinking about doing something, you know. And anyhow, yeah, I found it and found the evidence and got the story. And we decided that maybe some of these experiments really needed to be supervised rather than clandestine.
Oh.
Yeah. So we took up model rockets for a while. It was much safer.
Oh, yeah. That's a great alternative.
Mm-hmm.
That's a great alternative. Oh, my son, I can completely sympathize, again, with the very active imagination. My younger son has high-functioning autism. But he decided one day he wanted to see if everything could truly float. I love the way his mind thinks. So without my knowing it, he took my cell phone. Yes. And he threw it in the bathtub. And
Yeah.
Same thing. I said, where's my cell phone? And he got the look. He gave me the look that we were talking about earlier and ran out of the room. And the bottom of the bathtub is my cell phone.
Yeah, so. I used to wish that my bathroom had a drain built into the floor. Because my bathroom got flooded regularly. I accepted the fact that it was going to get flooded regularly. Actually, it resulted in twice the bathroom floor had to be replaced because of rot caused by frequent flooding. 10 years. That's not real good lifespan on replacing the floor. First time might not have been his fault because it would have been cumulative years before him, but second time definitely was. As far as bathroom flooding, I didn't have that kind of stuff with my daughter, but she had a wild imagination. I can remember her dancing in the backyard for hours. Just watching her, you know, through the kitchen window when she didn't know I was watching. Because, you know, her modern dance had nothing on her. Because she would just be out there dancing away with the horses or dancing away all by herself or with the dogs or whatever. And in her own world, as long as she didn't think anybody was watching her.
Oh.
Kids are amazing, too. I can remember one time I had laryngitis. I get laryngitis easily. And I had completely lost my voice, and I didn't have a voice for about 6 weeks, long time. I was starting to worry it was never going to come back. Anyhow, I could open my kitchen window, and I could whisper out that window, and the kids could hear me. And I was like, you know what? Before I lost my voice, I could have opened that window and screamed like a banshee, and they never would have heard me.
Uh-huh.
Now that I have to whisper all the time, I can open the window and just whisper, and they hear me. I never could understand this.
Well, it's selective listening. It's selective listening because I'm like you, I can call and call and call for my children. But the minute I open a chip bag, they can come from across the house, and they are there at my elbow. They can hear a chip bag open. So their hearing is just amazing at that point.
and they can't find the laundry hamper, but they can see a chocolate bar on top of the refrigerator.
Oh, yes, yes, or see their favorite cereal at the very top shelf in the grocery store.
Yeah, yeah, it's amazing, you know?
It is, and there are some times I watch both my boys. My boys are far apart in age. I have a 21-year-old now, and my younger son is about to turn 12 in about another month.
Uh-huh.
But, oh, yeah, that's a big gap. But they still have these wonderful imaginations, and they're so much fun. And sometimes I'm amazed, and then I stop and realize I think they must have got it from me because, like I said earlier, you know, and we both agreed we had to make our own fun whenever we were younger. And sometimes I did use my imagination to let's say, manipulate my parents a little bit.
Oh, yeah.
I wanted a weenie dog whenever I was a little girl. So one day I had the theory if I took a weenie and tied a string around it and pulled it around the yard, that A, either that weenie would turn into a weenie dog, I was very young, or my parents would feel sorry for me and give me that dachshund.
Uh-huh.
Oh, yeah. The only thing I got was my mother looking out the kitchen window and seeing me drag this weenie around the yard and running out and getting me, and I didn't get my dachshund.
Yeah, we did have a dachshund when I was a kid, but unfortunately she just didn't seem to like children much. I remember mostly being bit.
Oh.
So she wasn't exactly child-friendly. And I don't think we were particularly ornery children either, because we grew up in the country around animals. Orneriness, you know, was quickly discouraged by both parents and the animals themselves.
We wouldn't be seen
so
that here.
I think she was just kind of that, you know, as far as putting up with kids and their nonsense. Not all small dogs are comfortable with little kids and their continual darting motions. I know that my dogs, none of them are used to kids, and I have to watch them around my granddaughter.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that's kind of the thing. My big dog actually thinks that all small children are armed and dangerous, because when she was a puppy, there was an accident with a 3-year-old, and the bat came down across her nose.
Oh.
And as a result, you know, all kids are armed, in her opinion.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, I can see that happening. My father used a German Shepherd dog. In fact, years ago I wrote a story entitled Some Snowballs Don't Melt. Whenever I began my writing career, like I said, many years ago, and it was in Chicken Soup for the Dog Lover Soul.
Mm-hmm.
And my dad didn't have any professional lessons in training cattle dogs, but there was such a close connection with my dad and this dog. My dad could simply point at a cow, and that dog would know which cow that my dad wanted. And that dog would cut that cow out from the herd. But this dog had a very sensitive tail and a very sensitive nose. And unfortunately, sometimes I was the recipient of some pretty bad bites, because as a child, I would grab the tail. It was handy.
Yeah, yeah. Actually, my big dog used to, in her heyday, she's a real powerful swimmer, and I could grab her tail and she'd pull me through the water. I wouldn't want to count on that now. She's going on 14, and we've recently determined that she's, as we put it, getting loopy. Apparently, unfortunately, old body and puppy body don't necessarily perform the same. So she's been taking a lot of falls as she tries to cavort like she's 6 months old. Rather interesting. We've had to put up gates and restrict where she can go, because if she gets in certain rooms, she will go, and that's not winning very many awards with me. So, we've had to restrict her. She's always been the Empress of the Thing. Rather goofy. And while sometimes it's amusing, it's also very sad because, you know, obviously I've had her a very long time. And, there's a very strong bond between this particular dog. And I'm a dog lover, and, you know, you always hear about this once-in-a-lifetime dog. She's like my third once-in-a-lifetime dog. So, you know, I've been really, really fortunate. She's never had a formal obedience lesson, but she obeys a number of commands, or used to. Now she has the same kind of hearing a child does, selective. And when she feels like it. Otherwise, she looks at you like, what did you say? Yeah.
I don't understand you.
Pardon?
I said she's saying, I don't understand you.
Yeah, and there are times when I do wonder, you know, whether she understands me or not. But she completely understands words like eat, cookie, dinner, you know, hungry. Keywords like that, oh, yeah, they still have lots of meaning. And she'll talk back, but she obviously doesn't use words. Eating for her, chewing motion. She'll make a chewing motion with her mouth when she's hungry. She'll poke me with her nose and make this chewing motion. One night, this is a number of years ago now, she wakes me up like at 2 o'clock in the morning, and I'm thinking something's wrong because the dog never wakes me up in the middle of the night. And she's been, you know, really persistent at poking my chest. And I wake up, and I'm like, what's wrong? She's telling me she wants to eat. I'm like, oh, no, 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 we're not getting up now for snacks. Yeah.
Oh, no. One thing that I have, I guess he's somewhat of my muse, I have a dog who sits in my office whenever I write. His name is Nikki. Mm-hmm. And he kind of inspires me to sit and write him whenever I don't feel like it. Nikki has a special ability. My husband has...
I've seen many dogs that smile over the years, and that's always kind of spooky.
It is. And the very first few times that I would have to leave town, either for a book signing or an event or just to visit relatives, we board him at the vets, and the first few times I'd have to explain to dog likes to smile, and then I would point at my husband and say he's the one who taught him to.
Yeah, I think a number of years ago I was working in a boarding kennel and smiled and talk about, you know, I can understand where the vet techs are coming from. Because you're looking at it and going, is that a smile or a snarl? I'm not sure.
Exactly.
Yeah, it is. It is very eerie. Usually, you know, the most common breed that I've seen smile is rat terriers.
Oh.
I've seen a lot of Jack Russells that do, but rat terriers, I think, is probably the most common one. And then our Feist would occasionally smile, and I was never sure what it meant with her because. Cheerfulness with our old Feist wasn't her thing. She was never really cheerful. She was always kind of grumpy. And I always blamed it because she was a rescue and I was like the sixth home she had. I always blamed it on, you know, bad start in life. But she would occasionally smile and I was never sure what it meant. But I did know it was creepy whenever she did it.
It is a little bit unsettling whenever you go to the grocery store and you come back home and you open your door and there's your Jack Russell sitting on the back of the chair smiling at you.
Oh, yeah. You better have brought the milk bones, right?
Exactly.
Yeah. I have to admit, milk bones don't rate high at our house. they're passionate about vanilla cookies or frosted oatmeal cookies or the absolute best is those oatmeal cream pies.
Yeah. Love. And in fact, I have to admit it, whenever I was creating the cookbook, every recipe in the children's activity cookbook has to do with peanut butter. All the recipes do. And I absolutely had no idea there were so many different ways to use until I started researching for this book. For example, I guess you can tell by my accent, I am a native Texas girl.
Yep, I would say you pretty much have a native Texas accent.
I can't hide that one. We even went to Georgia earlier on in the year, and I was talking to a lady, and she said, "You're not from here, are you?" And I said, "No, ma'am, I'm not." And I said, "Where do you think I'm from?" And she said, "I think you're from Texas." I said, "I think you're right."
It's funny how distinctive our accents are, because I get that all the time. I'll be out and people say, "You're not from here, are you?" Because I live in Mississippi, and anyone who's lived in Mississippi knows I do not have a Mississippi accent.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so same thing when I lived in New Orleans, and I do not have a New Orleans accent.
And you're right, and that's another accent. I do have family living in New Orleans, and that is a very distinctive accent.
It used to be that you could tell what ward someone was from by their accent. That's how distinctive New Orleans was.
Oh, wow. Now, see, I didn't know that.
Yeah. I was saying about accents, the way people talk, dialects, I don't know why I do. To me, it's a pattern I hear.
Mm-hmm.
Just like when you look at, you know, various patterns in cloth, I hear them in the way people talk. And, you know, it's almost a visual thing. You know, I hear the sound and it creates this pattern that says Texas or New Orleans or, you know, Chicago or New York or whatever. And, you know, so I really did pay attention and do some research on the various New Orleans accents. And that's not true so much now as it was even before. You know, if you went back 30, 40 years, it was much more definite.
Oh, wow.
That
is interesting.
Trivia that nobody knew.
Yeah, that's something I can spring on my family whenever they come back home tonight.
Yeah, it used to be you knew, you could tell.
Oh, wow.
You know, and that isn't true today. It's not quite as definite. You still get certain things that are definite New Orleans things. Making groceries.
Oh.
You don't go grocery shopping, you go make groceries.
Oh, well, that is interesting. That is interesting. I unfortunately told someone, "Bless your heart," one time, and I did not realize that it takes on a different meaning than it does here in Texas.
Okay.
Here in Texas, it means "you poor thing." And I was told very politely that in some parts that "bless your heart" means somewhat of an insult.
It can be, but it's like saying "that's nice."
Right.
You know, it can be an insult, you know. Since we're staying G-rated, I'm not going to tell the whole story behind it.
Right.
But, yeah, that can mean exactly the opposite sometimes. But a lot of areas have different nuances to phrases that are common in other parts of the country. The United States is a huge country.
It is.
So it's no wonder that what you say in one area would have a slightly different connotation if you say it in another area.
Right. Absolutely. It's that's something that's interesting, that I find very interesting. I love to learn about different things about different parts of the U.S. Mm-hmm. And trivia and history and everything else. But I got off on a rabbit trail.
Yeah, I don't even remember where we started off at, but we went off on language. Language is so important to authors, to set the tone for the main characters, to set the tone for the area that it's supposed to be happening in, especially if you're dealing with a fantasy world, that fantasy world is going to have a different kind of tone. I mean, face it, okay, Lord of the Rings and Harry Potter are both penned by British authors, but they're very different worlds.
Oh, exactly. And even whenever you're writing for children, just my opinion, you have to make sure that you keep current with what kids are saying, so it'll make the story more believable.
Yeah, yeah. And what interests them, you know. I'm finding my granddaughter's, three going on four, but my daughter is 30-something, mm-hmm. and I won't give her exact age. She might come whack me or something. she'll in the things that I went, heard her say, I don't necessarily hear from my granddaughter. And there's lots of changes, I mean, in social mores, because I raised my daughter in a different part of the country, and now we both happen to live in Mississippi, and so my granddaughter is growing up, in Mississippi's local culture. And things are different, a lot different. Some things that I consider kind of silly are really important to people in the South. And I tend to be somewhat of a Southern heretic, you might say, because I'm like, well, that's kind of silly. I don't know. There again, I'm not native to the area, so I see it from an outsider's eyes, even though I live here. And it does make a little bit of difference. And it's funny to hear my granddaughter learning to talk, because her mother still has the same accent she grew up with. It's a little bit slower, but it still says I didn't grow up in Mississippi. And our family around us thinks we talk funny too. So my granddaughter's got this hybrid accent thing going on. And it'll be interesting, after she gets all the letters of the alphabet. Ours are a huge challenge right now. In fact, I'm not sure. Sometimes it's actually what she's saying is in English. I'm like, what did you say? She'll have to repeat it. Grandmas are real good for encouraging good diction, because grandmas don't always get it. Anyhow, to hear the hybrid sort of speech that she is coming up with that incorporates both. Really, the way her mom talks and the way her dad talks.
Oh, that is interesting. That is interesting. And my sons, it's really strange. You were talking about the different accents from the different wards in New Orleans. Well, as we were talking about it, it just hit me. It's the same way, really, with the different regions in Texas. Where I grew up was considered the Blackland Prairie region of Texas. And I don't know if you've ever heard of this area, but I was from around a town by the name of Waco.
Well, I think most people have heard of Waco if they're, of sufficient age, because Waco has a little bit of history and made sure that it made the national news,
Yeah, that's right. That's absolutely correct. That's absolutely correct. But I have, in that area, there are some people who have a little bit of a twang whenever they talk, and I find that the more tired I get and the more twangy I sound at times, and I sound just a little bit different sometimes than the people here around the Austin area.
Mm-hmm.
The more tired I am, but that was also going with this. One thing that here, you could do a whole show on barbecue with him. I'm a little bit biased, but I believe he is the best barbecuer I've ever met.
It's kind of like the chili thing. Most of my family lives in New Mexico. So the chilies themselves, I have heard people go on about the different chilies and the varieties and the regions they come from as though it was wine from Napa Valley.
Oh, yeah.
Front bite, back bite. Oh, yeah.
Oh,
you know,
yeah.
They go on and on and on about it, and you're like, it's chili, for crying out loud. Is it red or green? Yep, I'm a heretic no matter where I go.
But the one thing that I did find out whenever I was researching for this cookbook is that you want to cut the acidity in chili, put a little tablespoon of peanut butter in it. Near the end of the cooking time, it adds just a little touch of sweetness. It's not overpowering, and it cuts the acidity just a little bit.
So
and
like adding chocolate. You add a little bit of chocolate to it, and it melts it too.
Yeah, it does. It does, and there are a lot of recipes that do, you're right, that do call for cocoa. Mm-hmm. And I've done that as well. Of course, my mother was just flabbergasted. She said, I would have never put peanut butter in the chili whenever your dad was alive. He just wouldn't eat it. Mom, I'm telling you, you can't really taste it. Dad would have loved it. But
as long as he didn't know it was there.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah, you don't want to mess with the chili. But there's just so many different recipes using peanut butter. Of course, you have your Asian recipes, which uses a lot of peanut butter, but just a lot of main dishes, period. There's a lot of main dishes that call for peanut butter. It's not used just for desserts. It's a great ingredient.
I remember a yeast bread that my mother used to make, and not all that long ago, but I asked her for the recipe and she couldn't find it. It was for a peanut butter yeast bread.
Ooh.
Now, plain by itself, I didn't particularly care for it, but toasted with some butter and jelly, it was to die for.
Oh, that sounds wonderful.
And it was, you know, peanut butter colored. You can smell peanut butter in it. It wasn't a sweet bread, but it went so well with jelly. And I have to confess, one of my favorite, I think I talked about it on the last show, too. It must be getting about the year to make it again, because I don't make it very often, because it's not really good for you. Grilled peanut butter and bacon sandwiches. Absolute favorite sandwich.
That sounds interesting. You would have the savoriness of the bacon.
Yeah, that salty, crunchy, the smoky, combined with the slightly sweetened, salty kind of peanut butter flavor, and peanut butter when it's heated completely changes texture.
Oh, yeah.
It gets super gooey. It's like, okay, another version of that, the Tin Roof Sundae, which is the hot fudge with the peanuts. Mm-hmm. Try it with hot fudge and hot peanut butter. That's another no-no. Yeah, I don't get to have it very often. Hot peanut butter drizzled over it because it's so runny, and then when it hits the cold ice cream, of course, it immediately solidifies. So, yeah, very different.
Oh, that sounds... I'm going to have to try that. I'm kind of like you. I can't have or I don't eat a lot of sweets anymore, but I do still indulge in my peanut butter, and I look at it in the positive sense. It's got more potassium. It's heart-friendly.
Well, yeah, I look on it as, in my case, I was diagnosed as a diabetic this year, and we've discovered that peanut butter sort of stabilizes my blood sugar.
Mm-hmm.
I don't go high or low. I stay about where I should be. It's actually a good food for me. So peanut butter is now allowed for, you know, a peanut butter sandwich for lunch or whatever. Yeah.
Yeah. I eat it in moderation. Of course, everything in moderation, but I enjoy it. Now, I will say whenever I was creating this cookbook, I tested every recipe. And I have to give kudos to Rachel Ray. I've always loved her show, and she would always talk about putting together a cookbook. And I would think, oh, well, gee, that seems really simple. I'd like to do that one day. I never realized
that. Oh, no. It's hard work.
It is. It is the several different times. It has to be perfect.
Mm-hmm.
And it got to the point I tried these peanut butter recipes so much that my family's eyes would get glazed over. At supper, they'd say, does it have peanut butter in it, Mama?
It was sort of like my house. I just recently finished a muffin cookbook. So for months, we had been eating muffins.
Oh, wow.
I was giving muffins to my daughter. I was making them when I'd go visit her house. I would make muffin recipes there, and I made muffins at home. We gave muffins to the neighborhood kids. We fed muffins to our dogs. I was so sick of muffins. I said, you know what? Because I actually, there was 163 recipes in the book, and was less than the goal number. But I said, I cannot look at another muffin. There is no way I can look at another muffin. I'm so sick of muffins. Yeah, there were some I liked, although it got harder to really, really thrill me. Some were, you know, like, okay, it's okay, the texture's good, the flavor's good, but, you know, I'm really kind of muffined out, so I'm not going to get real excited about this. Earlier on, it was easier to impress me. But it was muffins from A to Z, and depending on where it was in the test list, because I didn't do them from A to Z.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, I would probably despise a lot of apple muffins. But yeah, I'm trying to find all of the letters. I got desperate for X.
Oh, how did you find one for X?
Well, I think it's pronounced Shigua, if I remember correctly. It's supposedly the Mandarin word for a small watermelon. That was it. I was like, okay, that sounds good to me. I couldn't find anything for X. I was desperate. I had been looking for X, all sorts of stuff, and no, I was having a lot of trouble. X was difficult. There was one other letter, and I don't remember what it was. You would think things like Q and U would be tough. They weren't as tough. There were two letters that were real hard, and X was the hardest. And I don't remember what it was, but it wasn't Q. I mean, Q, I actually found a lot of them, you know, to use. But, yeah, some of the letters were pretty tough.
I can imagine. I can imagine. That's not much.
It was fun, but I have to admit, by the end, I was like, I can't look at another muffin. And to be honest, I have not eaten another muffin. It's a standing joke when we go through the bakery, you know, aisle at the store. Hey, honey, you want some muffins? And I get a dirty look.
Well, same thing. Same thing. I would go to the grocery store after the cookbook was complete, and I would come home with a jar of peanut butter. And it was kind of a joke in our house. I would say, hey, guys, you want to see Daddy's eyes glaze over?
Uh-huh.
Look what I have, peanut butter. But I'm very proud of this cookbook. One thing that I loved to do whenever I was a child was bake with my grandmothers.
Uh-huh.
But both my grandmothers were excellent bakers, and I just have a lot of fond memories sitting in their kitchens on the weekends, sitting on the stool, and while they cooked, they would tell me stories of their childhood, and I would watch the different techniques they used, and I would see how much passion that they had for what they were doing. And in fact, I was munching on one of my grandmother's, and here we go again, peanut butter cookies, and I said, Granny, what makes your cookies so good? And she said, it's love. I put love in every recipe that I bake for my family.
We all do that.
Yeah, exactly. It's something that you enjoy doing. Cooking is relaxing. It's a great way to burn off nervous energy for me. I'm a hyper little person. But it's a great way to relax, and I love bringing my family into the kitchen, my boys, and engaging them in helping me cook. Not only are they learning culinary skills, but we are engaging in conversation. We're making memories. Uh-huh. And that's something that I did with my grandmothers. And
the iSofa collection.
I was really excited because last year I entered my cookbook and the Purple Dragonfly Book Awards contest. And I thought, well, I'll hit or miss. If I win, I will be ecstatic. If not, at least I tried. That's all you can do. You can only try. The only part of failing is not having tried at all.
Go, go, go.
And I was really surprised that I got second place with this cookbook.
No justice! No peace!
I am very proud of it. I'm very excited about it. Like I said, cooking is my second passion. Cooking and writing and being out in nature are the things that I love to do.
I had written a number of cookbooks as well as a fiction and a couple, books on other topics. But recently I said, you know what, I've written these books on cooking, but I don't think my waistline can take any more. And I think the muffin book, because of the size of the recipe, the number of recipes that were in it and the fact that they were all muffins kind of like burned me out on cooking. To be honest, since the muffin book is finished, I've done minimal cooking, absolutely minimal. And partly it's summertime in Mississippi. You don't feel like cooking. It's hot.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
So, I don't feel like cooking, especially since we're very frugal and we actually only air condition one room and it's not the kitchen. I tend to go, it's guerrilla warfare for cooking for me right now. Until it cools down, that's the way it'll stay. And I thought, I think I want to do something that's not cooking for a while. And so I've been exploring other creative avenues and enjoying myself because I hadn't done that in a long time. So, yeah, I'm expanding my horizons here.
Oh, what are you working on right now?
I actually am working on a number of craft and sewing projects focused on dogs.
Oh, neat.
Yeah, just for the heck of it. As well as I had an accident 5 years ago almost 5 years ago now, that left me with an arm that doesn't work. I hadn't tried sewing at all. Uh-huh. I was afraid I was going to discover there's one more can't. And everything becomes more difficult when you lose the use of one arm, including cooking. Since then, I've learned to use machines and ask for help, and my husband's real good, and he's also a good cook, so, he can help me with that stuff. So I thought, okay, we'll try this. So I tried a couple of simple, small things and a couple more things and got a little braver, and I can do it. I have to do it in small bites. Two-hour projects are not 2 hours for me anymore. It'll probably take me 2 days to a week or longer. But that's okay. I'm not in a hurry.
I understand.
There comes a point in your life where you quit being in a hurry, I think. And that's maybe what grandmas are good for.
I couldn't wait to see her again.
And I wanted to tell you,
but I didn't want her to see my psoriasis.
We have more in common than you know.
No matter how many ways I try to cover up my psoriasis,
keeps
showing up.
Whenever you told me about your arm, it sent chills down my spine
because I have nerve damage. Over these dry, cracked, red, flaky patches. I'm not sure if I want it to be. This is more than uncomfortable.
My right arm is
visit psoriasis.com, where you can get Refusing to Hide, a free guide filled with simple strategies for living.
Pick up a small container of creamer, and it resulted in these horrible cramps that had me doubled over in the kitchen, howling like a banshee. My husband thought I was being killed. because I get these. It's like you talk about nerve damage. It involves my neck and shoulder, and the result is it sends really bad messages. It's like an internet connection that just isn't quite right, and it garbles everything. So something that shouldn't involve a pain message will, or it might cause spasms, and my arm will suddenly jerk, and I'll drop or spill or whatever. And y'all admit, I'm prone to have meltdowns, one too many accidents in the same day, Yeah, I'll have another meltdown, and my husband will calmly come and clean up the mess and send me off to have a cup of coffee and, you know, calm down again. And, you know, I'll be okay. But, yeah, the meltdowns, I have to laugh about them when I'm not having them, because at the time they're occurring, this is a national disaster. This may be a silly little event, but it is, you know, in my little world, it's proportions of Katrina. Yeah.
I understand, and believe me, I know where you're coming from. Before, I'm going way, way back on this one. And actually, what's pretty funny, whenever I was young, I'm going way back. I still consider myself young. I'm not going to go into any great detail, but I'm in my early 40s.
Mm-hmm.
So, as you know, hey, we're young, right?
Yeah.
But whenever I was a young girl, I thought, because I grew up on a ranch, I grew up in the country, I had all kinds of animals that you could imagine, horses, cattle, everything. And as you know, in the farm, you did your own veterinary work. And I thought that I wanted to be a veterinarian.
Yeah, I did too. I'll admit it. And you know what scared me?
What's that?
I worked in a dog kennel with hunting dogs when I was a teenager. And litter of Springer Spaniels was born, and I was being taught how to dock tails.
Mm-hmm.
It was fine, you know. You're working with a very small creature because it's down there just a few days old. And I did my thing, and then I looked at the piece of tail laying on the floor, and I remember everything starting to go gray and being told to sit down. And I said, you know what, I don't think this is from – it turns out that blood – really, really bothers me.
Uh-huh.
And apparently little pieces of tail laying on the floor twitching really, really bother me. I never became a veterinarian. I never worked in a vet clinic either.
Well, that's the way it was with me. I was fine up until the point where, I don't know if you realize it, but we have cougars in Texas.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I had a beautiful, beautiful Palomino mare. And I went out to go ride her one day, and she had deep lacerations beginning from her chest, the entire length of her body, and a hunk missing out of her neck. I don't want to get too graphic. But I took her to our family friend who was the veterinarian. And he knew what my dreams were, and he said, let me give you a quick lesson. Right now I can tell you she needs a tetanus shot, and this is how you give a tetanus shot. And he showed me. Wonderful, wonderful man. And he said, your horse, I believe, has been attacked by a cougar. This is what I want you to do. I want you to take this horse home, and in order to heal her without scarring, I need you to peel the scabs off the horse every day. And wash out the wounds with a solution of Dawn dishwashing liquid, because, you know, the blue Dawn is great to use on animals.
Uh-huh.
And the first time I did it, I said, okay, I can do this. The first time I heard the sound of it pulling off the hide, kind of like you, everything started spinning for me, and my mom took over. And I decided I did not want to be there. Plus, my vet told me, they're going in vet school, they're going to give you an animal that they find on the road and tell you how that animal died. And I told him, I said, I can tell you how it died. It got hit by a car. And I thought I was pretty funny. He didn't find that too amusing at the time. But like I said, I don't want to get too graphic. But then I decided, after I got married, I became very serious about my secondary education, and I decided I had a 10-year plan. And my 10-year plan was to go to school, go to college. I attended St. Edward's University in Austin. I was going to be a coach in girls' athletics, and then I was going to move into a sports trainer, kind of into the sports med field. On my way, I'm getting ahead of myself. I worked at St. Edward's as a security officer to help pay my way through school. Well, one night on the way to St. Edward's from my shift, I became a victim of road rage.
Mm-hmm.
And someone decided I was driving too slow. And they passed me in the median. By the way, I was going 10 miles over the speed limit. They passed me in the median, swerved back in front of me, slammed on their brakes. I locked mine up because I didn't want to rear-end them. I mean, that's ingrained in us. You don't hurt other people,
mm-hmm.
or some of us. I locked up, spun out of control, went into the opposite lane of I-35 and got hit by a quarter-ton truck pulling a trailer. I had massive lacerations on my face, which have since healed without scarring, and I had what you call a brachial plexus injury, which is nerve damage to the brachial plexopathy area of the right arm. And for a long time, I couldn't use my right arm, and I didn't know what I was going to do, but I did know I was going to do something, so I turned to my second passion, which was writing.
Mm-hmm.
And it helped me to journal my feelings, and that's whenever my writing career began.
Well, you know, it's funny about the parallels. I had a car accident, but we're going to leave that thought alone because it is time for us to take a break. So, folks, while we are away, go check out Debbie's books. You want to give the titles again, Debbie?
Sure. The first book is Amelia Frump and Her Peanut Butter Loving Overactive Imagination. And the second, the cookbook activity book, is Amelia Frump and Her Peanut Butter Loving Overactive Imagination is Cooking Up a Peanut Butter Storm. You can find them on Amazon, or you can find them on the Dancing with Bear Publishing Children's line.
Okay, and folks, don't go anywhere. We will be right back in just a few minutes with more conversation with Debbie Rapolo. So stay tuned.
Show and wish to join us in the chat room, visit paltalk.com. Go to the social issues, select other, and enter the UFO Paranormal Radio Network.
The paranormal, ghosts, spirits,
demons,
reincarnation,
past lives,
the afterlife,
divination,
exorcisms,
witchcraft,
the unseen.
He's psychic medium Chris George.
And he's Victor the Voice Fireman.
We are Second Sight Radio. Join us live
every Thursday night from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time
on the UFO Paranormal Radio Network.
Tune in to the Mind Cemetery with your hosts Chip and Nicole every Monday night at 9 p.m. Eastern.
Exclusively on the...
Tune in to UFO Undercover, Wednesdays at 8 p.m. Eastern, with your host, Joe Montaldo, right here on the Paranormal Radio Network.
Welcome back to the Dawn of Shades. We are talking tonight with a children's book author by the name of Debbie Ripollo, and we're having a really, really great time with Amelia and her peanut butter overactive imagination. Yeah. So, where were we before we went on break?
Oh,
we were talking about accidents.
Yeah.
You know, and you know, accidents do influence us. While we were on break, we talked about the fact that I had a severe accident and tried an exit method that I don't recommend, which was through the windshield. And obviously that caused, you know, like major skin damage to my face. Don't use your face to punch a hole in a windshield either. Not a good thing. I was fortunate when I came back in the car because I just went out and I changed my mind apparently and decided to get back in through the same hole. And when I came down on the glass, I came down on my chin bones, which protect, you know, things like your carotid artery. Yeah. So even though my face looked like ground meat and I bled profusely, I didn't bleed to death. And so I'm still here to talk about you. And fortunately, even though at that time you could do a dental exam with my lips closed, I had really skilled trauma surgeons sew my face together in Phoenix and was left with minimal scarring. They did tell me that I would age more rapidly. So I'm blaming the fact that I've aged really rapidly the last decade on them, or not on them, on the accident. I got to have some excuse, right? I haven't figured out what I'm going to blame the gray hair on other than my kids.
That's a good excuse. I blame the gray hairs that I have right now, I blame on my children. Although my son, I have dark brown hair, and my son says, oh no, Mom, they're blonde hairs. We didn't put gray hairs in your head. So,
well, I tell people I'm not going gray, I'm going platinum.
There you go.
Yeah.
There
you know, actually, I quit dyeing my hair probably 8 years ago, maybe longer. I reverse stripped it for a while and went to natural salt and pepper, and now it's more like steel wool, except sort of straight. What about that color? Not blue, though, thank goodness. You know, and I remember, here's something from childhood. Lunchroom ladies, they all had either blue or green hair.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know where they bought the blue and the green dye, but it must have been a lunchroom lady requirement.
Yeah, you know, I didn't think about that until you mentioned it.
Yeah, they all did. It was either blue or green. Nobody had just gray hair or just white hair.
Yeah, and my little
blue hair or green hair. The green one still mystifies me.
Yeah, I don't know what they put in it. That is really, it's really unique. That's really unique. But one thing that I've discovered as I get older, I don't know if you, do you remember Irma Bombeck?
Oh, yeah. She was like my idol. I mean, because this was somebody, now granted, she was, I thought she was old when I was a young woman. She was probably my age now, which isn't old. But, and I can remember being very sad when she died, too. You know, that was devastating to me because she had such a unique take on humor. I always laughed because she had a column in the Phoenix newspaper. I always laughed at her columns. You know, she was hilarious. Her books were hilarious. When you'd see her on a television program, she was funny. But she was funny in a way that you could relate to.
Exactly. And that's one thing that I do. That's my other writing that I do is Irma Bombeck type writing. And I like to write it from the way she did, from the perspective of being a housewife and getting older. And I found that whenever I hit 40, and I don't know, I'm sure you can relate, you get treated just a little bit differently. And one thing that I wrote about in my humorous essay is that I went to Walmart on my birthday, and I bought a bottle of wine and a thing of Twinkies. And the whole thing here was you had to show your ID to show you were old enough. And I pulled out my driver's license, and the cashier looked at me. She said, "Oh, no, ma'am, I don't need that. I can tell by looking at you that you're old enough." Thank you.
Thank you, right? Yeah, it gets even better after you have your 50th birthday. Except then you enter the realm of you are now fully qualified to be really eccentric and odd. And you can dress really goofy to go to the store.
Mm-hmm.
All the rules, you know, no longer seem to apply because you absolutely don't care. You know, you're visiting the joys of menopause. And, you know, also, you know, your body is betraying you. And it's like some sad, sick joke on humanity that just about the time you get your brains all together, your body starts to fall apart.
Oh, yes.
So, you know, on a bad day, here I go trundling off to Walmart. And on a bad day, I can't even go by myself. My husband has to take me. All right, so there I am. I've got my cane. I go waltzing in there. And I can be cranky. I don't, you know, I don't have to use up my nice anymore. I can be as cranky as I want. I can glower at people. You know, I could talk too loud. I could do all those things, you know. And your priorities change after you become injured and no longer able. Makeup, oh, I don't even bother, you know. And after my accident, I never left the house without makeup for a long time because I got tired. And it wasn't because I was that. I did realize I was vainer than I thought. I never thought myself as a vain woman. And I discovered I really was. It's amazing what, you know, having your face look like ground meat and your head double its size does to your ego. But you realize, yes, I really am vain, and I like the old face a lot better. But I had a lot of furrows and discoloration and uneven skin as my face healed, because it took weeks for the scabs to go away, and it takes even longer for the blotchiness and the furrows to fill in and stuff. And when you have that kind of thing going on with your face, you get really goofy with the makeup. Because I had special stuff you put in to level the skin, because I had, like I said, these deep furrows. And so you level out the skin, and at the same time you're evening out your skin tone, then you put a foundation on. The whole process, I still got fast at it. I could do it in less than 15 minutes. And now I don't wear any makeup at all. In fact, I gave my daughter the last completely unopened containers of makeup I had and said, here, you know, use what you can and throw away the rest. And, you know, so I don't wear makeup anymore. And doing my hair, I'm right-handed. It's my right arm I can't use. So doing, yeah, I have long hair. I don't, my idea of doing my hair now is it gets sort of brushed out and it gets tied up. Okay, if it's lopsided, I don't care. I don't have to look at me. You know, if somebody else doesn't like looking at me, they can look away. But you know, when my face was scarred, and this is when I was still young, my 20s, people would stare at me. Mm-hmm. And then they would realize that they were staring, and then they would look away. And then they wouldn't look at me at all. And this included clerks in stores, waitresses. I even had part of the reason I have long hair today. I went to get my hair cut because it, you know, I waited till my face had healed up and I no longer had scabs, but my hair looked like it had been cut by a weed eater. Using the windshield of a car to cut your hair, not a recommended method, you know. Really, really looks choppy. So I wanted to get my hair cut, and because of my job, I was restricted on hairstyles. I couldn't have a whole bunch of different things, because that was when it was the, it was fashioned to nearly buzz part of your hair, or like around your ears and back of your head and stuff. That wasn't allowed. I had to have a conservative feminine hairstyle. So, you know, I just want something short, sort of even, you know, so that I don't look like I used a weed eater on my hair. The beautician acted like she was going to catch scars from me.
Oh, please.
Now, for anybody who's listening, scars aren't catching.
No.
Okay?
No.
You can't catch them.
No.
Yeah. So, anyhow, I was so humiliated, I guess is the only word I can come up with, by the experience of getting my hair cut. I let my hair grow out. I kept it long for years. I have cut it in between, but I did keep it long for years simply because I could not face ever, even though my face now, most people would never realize that I was so badly, had it cut up so badly. Because really the only intact skin I had was under the eyes, under my nose, and my lips. The rest of it, it was either literally sliced and diced or it was just road rash. Because you also lose skin if you slide along the windshield before you punch the hole in it.
Yes.
That skin comes off too.
Yes, I found that out the hard way as well. And I did, you know, talking about scars, Gia, my Nana, as I said earlier, was from the old school. As a little girl, I would ask her, Nana, do you think I'm pretty? And I'm sure we're from the same era, and I'm sure you've heard this, pretty is pretty does.
Oh, yeah.
And I asked her one day, Nana, would you please explain that to me? She said, baby, true beauty comes from within. True beauty is your actions, how you treat people. You treat people the way you want to be treated. If you have happiness and peace and love within yourself, then you are a beautiful person no matter how you look on the inside, outside. Excuse me. Ooh, messed up on that one. But I never did really contemplate that until my accident. And I had a wonderful, wonderful, wonderful nurse that was looking out after me as I was recovering. And I remember the day that she got me out of the bed. She said, we're going to brush your teeth. And I have a lot of respect for nurses and doctors. I grew my next door neighbor, the closest neighbor that I had, was an anesthesiologist. And just a wonderful lady. And we had a lot of friends who are nurses and doctors. I have a cousin that I haven't seen in years who's a neurosurgeon in Houston. But I have a lot of respect for these men and women. But I remember she took me to the mirror, and she said, I want you to look in the mirror. And I knew that my face looked like something out of Frankenstein, because I was told you had over 200 stitches and staples in your face and in your head. And I remember the trauma surgeon asking me, I was drifting in and out of consciousness, we have this new suture material, it's not cat gut, and I'd like to use it on you because it will have minimum scarring. But it hasn't really been tried out, can I use it? And I said, go for it. And he did. But this nurse made me look in the mirror, she said, do you know what I see? I said, lay it on me. She said, I see a beautiful person. I said, I think you're crazy. And she told me what my Nana had been telling me whenever I was a child, that true beauty comes from within.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, what you look like on the outside does not matter. As long as you are happy within yourself and you treat people the way you want to be treated, then you are a beautiful person. And that's a lesson that I've carried with me and I've passed on to my children throughout the years. You can't judge a person by how they look on the outside. Look deeper than that.
Yeah, in you know, I think my lesson was far different because I had enough vision return that I could see probably 3 or 4 feet around me most of the time. And I wanted to wash my hands. My daughter was only 4. She was terrified of my hands because they were literally crusted with blood. I wanted to wash my hands. And they wanted to get me up and get me a shower because I had glass shards all over me still.
Mm-hmm.
And so the first thing I want to do is wash my hands. So they helped me get to the sink, and I turn on the faucet. And I look up, and I see a window, and I see this scary-looking person over there. And, oh, they're like, God, they're horrible looking. And I'm like, they shouldn't let people like that wander around in a hospital. They'll scare patients. This was scary. You know, anybody who's had a concussion realizes your brain, it takes a while for circuits to reconnect.
Absolutely.
Because I'm going along this train of thought that they shouldn't let these people wander around in a hospital. And then it dawns on me, that's not a window. That's a mirror.
Oh,
and that's
wow.
You.
Wow.
And I was like, whoa. You know, at that moment I realized truly how vain I actually was. And how, this thing that we don't consider ourselves vain or, and so what, I really put a lot of stock in the way I look, more than I realized. And I kind of went, maybe we'll have to examine this when our brain's working better, because this is kind of a shock to the system to realize that this image you had of yourself that you thought was true was not true at all.
No.
That was, now granted, point, my head was still roughly twice normal size. No, I wasn't recognizable. You know, obviously I didn't recognize myself. But, you know, even as the swelling went down and the sutures were taken out, the scabs healed and so forth and so on, it took probably over a year before I looked like myself again without makeup.
Yeah.
Now, granted, within a couple months when I put on makeup, no, you couldn't tell anything was wrong underneath that layer. But, you know, my ego still, because of the fact that, you know, when you were in shops and people realized that you were, your face was messed up, they wouldn't wait on you, and things like that, that had made me so, it really had shattered my self-confidence. And then I wanted to change the fields I worked in. I wanted to find another job. And I couldn't even get an interview because I couldn't get past the fact that my face was messed up.
Yeah.
Now, whether it was partly because of my own shaky self-esteem because of it, or if my face was actually that bad, I really don't know. But I know that for that 6 months that I could not even get an interview.
And it's hard. It's hard to go out there. I know exactly where you're coming from with scars on your face. And because people do stare, I had different responses. I had to wear a brace on my right hand to try to get some of my nerves going again. How my nerves finally ended up regenerating is another funny story that I'll touch on briefly. But it's hard. It's hard. It is a blow to your self-esteem, and I started looking at people and things a bit differently. But I'm going to be a little humorous. How I got my nerves in my arm to regenerate was a couple of years later. And do you remember the scooters with the handles? They were eventually recalled because those handles would collapse forward and cause accidents with the children.
Mm-hmm.
I found out firsthand that they weren't lying. My son had one of those scooters, and we have a long porch on our house. I live in a 100-year-old farmhouse now. But my son made a grave mistake. I was in my early 30s then, and he said, "I'd let you ride my scooter, but you're too old."
Ah.
So I said, "Really? Watch me. I'm the kind of person, this is also like Amelia, too, you don't dare her to do anything because she will do it. She will take on the challenge."
Mm-hmm.
So me, the grown-up version of Amelia, I said, "Really, watch me." I went down the front porch the first time, smooth sailing. I was sailing. I was doing great. And then the front wheel hit a twig. And the handles went forward. And in PE, they teach you, if you're going to fall forward, don't put your hands down. Don't put your wrists down. I did.
Uh-huh.
I fractured my wrist and my right arm. We went to the emergency room. My husband is a former EMT. And he came home, and I showed him my wrist. And I knew something was going on because he tells my son, "Go get my medical kit." And he takes out bandages, and he starts wrapping my wrist. And he starts putting marks on the bandages. "So what are you doing?" He said, "I'm showing where to cut." He said, "I think you need to go to the emergency room. I think you broke your wrist." So I sat in there and had all kinds of attention from the physicians and the nurses. Different nurses would come in and say, "What happened to you, honey?" Oh, and I told him just what I told you. I was riding my son's scooter. And how old are you? And I'd tell him, thank you. And then right outside the doorway, I'd hear him giggling.
I fared better than you. It wasn't a scooter. In my case, it was inline skates, rollerblades.
Oh, my.
Yeah. I wasn't real good on roller skates either.
Uh-huh.
I was even worse on rollerblades. On ice skates, but roller skates, I wasn't too good at. You could master the stop thing. Wasn't real good on rollerblades either, but I had to try my daughter's rollerblades.
Oh, no.
I didn't break my wrist. It wasn't that spectacular. It was more humiliating, you know. I think I ended up with skinned elbow and knees, but that was it. The real disaster occurred over a basketball game with neighborhood kids.
Oh, no.
I scooped up the basketball, because I'd played basketball as a teenager. I scooped up the basketball, and in the process, because we were playing on blacktop, I peeled back a fingernail. Now, anybody who has ever done that knows how bad that hurts.
Oh, yes.
Your finger is wham, wham, wham. And you really, really want to swear. But my son was 3 at the time, and he was mimicking everything I said. So I'm not going to swear. Instead, I'm dancing around, holding my finger that now feels like it's about 4 feet in diameter, and I'm hopping around and I'm saying nasty words, nasty words, nasty words, literally saying the phrase nasty words. Okay, that was my substitute for swear words, was just dance around saying nasty words, because all the neighborhood kids are playing too, you know. Mm-hmm. So, end result, finally get the fingernail folded back down and a Band-Aid put over it, and now the throbbing's down to normal. The next day, I take my 3-year-old and go to the grocery store, and we were living in a little bitty town in Minnesota, and it was 1957 there, and they had refused to progress beyond that. I'm already sort of the Scarlet Woman because I'm a single parent at that point.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody in town, all the women are firmly convinced I'm after their husbands.
Oh,
all
no.
of them at the same time. So I'm already, you know, somewhat ostracized and regarded suspiciously. And here I am with my 3-year-old, and each little old lady he saw, in his bright, cheery, loud 3-year-old voice, mm-hmm. he clearly announces, "My mama says nasty words." There's no sense of explaining this. You can't shut this kid up. It's just horrific. I think he must have told 100 women that. Yeah, how they fit 100 women in the store, I don't know, but it felt like it. And all I could do was hurry up, get what I need, and get out of this store, because there is no way. The more I try to hush him, the more he says it. And there's no explaining the nasty words. It's nasty words, literally. That's exactly what I said. Yeah, I'm a bad, bad person at that point. So, yeah, the whole thing was that nasty words was not a good substitute for swear words.
No, that is funny. These kids pick up on stuff so, so easily. And, you know, I will say that my wrist, because I broke it where I fractured it and made the nerves start to regenerate again.
Ah, and lucky
yes.
you.
Oh, yes, I got more use of my right arm now. I have a lot more use in my right arm because I've fractured my wrist. And
you know,
I
that's actually unusual.
It really is. It really is. And I asked the physician whenever he was taking off my cast, I said, "I have more use of this arm. Is that normal?" And he said, "Well, no, not usually, but the nerves have regenerated. But don't break your wrist again, please."
Yeah, you know, in my case, I've had nerve damage in a number of body areas. Once due to the car accident, I'd taken out the dash with my knee. Not a recommended
Ooh.
Method of destroying a vehicle. You really don't do it. But blunt trauma to the knee on the inside of it left me with a substantially sized area where I had no sensation at all, nerve damage.
Oh.
And that never did regenerate.
Oh, no.
And eventually, the veins in that portion of my leg have calcified. So I have pipes instead of tubes, flexible tubes.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, don't do it. It's not recommended, so don't do that kind of blunt trauma to your leg. It's a bad thing to do.
No.
Anyhow, but I was told I had some nerve damage in my face from another injury that if it regenerates, it'll do so within 6 months. If it doesn't regenerate within 6 months, because I end up with, this sounds stupid, but a portion of my upper lip and the tip of my nose were numb.
Oh, wow.
And, you know, it did. About 6 months later, all of a sudden I could feel again. But I've never had anything beyond 6 months. You know, I keep hoping that, you know, this whole neck and shoulder thing for me goes away and I regain use of my arm. It'd be nice. I'd even be happy with, you know, just no more pain. But it doesn't seem like it's going to happen. And the doctors keep telling me, no, it's not going to happen. But I can hope, right?
Yeah. Yeah. It will get better.
It has to get better. I'm not going to accept anything else other than it'll get better, or at least more tolerable. But pain is a relative thing, too. You know, things I used to think hurt, I'm like, well, that's nothing. And I can remember, too, you know, when I did something and there was a resulting crash. And we were the crash and burn kids. My mom used to buy peroxide in half-gallon jugs.
Mm-hmm.
So
oh, wow.
A lot of peroxide. You know, right down to my skull fracture. I got dragged by a three-wheeler and grated off my scalp. Not
oh
a recommended thing to do. I highly recommend helmets.
Oh, yeah, wow.
You know, that was the kind of joys that my mother got to put up with. I don't know how she survived us, to be honest.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Because we were crash and burn kids, but there was always one of us bleeding. We even had, you know, special looks that my mother recognized that was going to be, oh, it's just bad. Because I can remember the day that I came home after grating my head. I hadn't realized that I'd cut myself until I'd walked about a quarter mile home. And then my sister had seen me, and she'd screamed that I was bleeding. And my younger sister was the family drama queen.
Uh-huh.
And I thought she was pulling my leg. And I told her to, you know, in typical sisterly love fashion, I told her to shut up.
Oh.
Yeah, shut up. Yeah. And she kept screaming. And I remember I put my hand to the back of my head and come away, and it was all full of mud and blood.
Oh.
And I was like, oh, yuck. And so, you know, my own blood affects me just as badly as anybody else's. So I stuck my bloody hand behind my back so I didn't have to look at it. Oh, you know, on the back, I was soaked to the waist. I didn't even know I was bleeding.
Oh, my gosh.
And, you know, when I come around the house when I got home, my mother was working in her flowers. And, you know, I remember saying, Mom, we had special voices for I'm bleeding profusely, you know, fix me now. And she immediately comes to attention. And I didn't say anything. I just turned around and she went, oh, my God. Yeah.
Oh, wow. It's a wonder that our mother survived. It really is, because I'm the same way as you. I was a rough and tumble kid, and anything that could would happen to me. And I'm really surprised that our mothers made it. I will say that I have learned as a parent that my children have become my teachers. As I said earlier on in your program, I have my younger son, the one who's fixing to turn 12, has been diagnosed with high-functioning autism.
Mm-hmm.
And I have learned how to see things. I know we talked about how people stare at you.
Mm-hmm.
It's intensified whenever you go out into public with a child with autism. Because one of the signs of autism is squealing, flapping, and doing things that just don't look normal to most people. It's a neurological disorder, and it's something that they can't help. But you still get the stares, and I do have people asking me, you know, what's going on with them. And one thing that a child with autism, it's hard. Everything for them is amplified, lights, sound, smells, feeling. And sometimes out in public, if the sound is too loud, like in a crowded room, like if we're talking right now, this would be fine for him. But at a rock concert, it would be nuts for him, and he would have a meltdown because he can't handle it. But I have learned from him not to take the little things for granted, because they're so in tune to what's going on. They see the fine details.
Mm-hmm.
And things that we take for granted, like a sunset, that we're too busy to notice. Several times he stood out on the porch and said, "Oh, that is so beautiful." And I'll stop and look. That is beautiful. And he loves people. He loves people. I've taught him about stranger danger, and he's a lot better than he used to be. But he loves unconditionally.
Mm-hmm.
And he'll tell people, "I love you." He will also, children with autism are also very blunt, and they will tell you, like the other day, I said, "Does this make me look fat?" "Yes, it does."
"Thank you."
Exactly, exactly. And I have one weird quirk. If someone comes to my house, I want it to be absolutely clean.
Uh-huh.
And the cable man, of all people, were coming to repair something for the computer the other day. And I cleaned up my office. I said, "I think this has been the cleanest this room has been in a long time." And my son looks around. He said, "Yep, it sure has." But I wrote a story about him, and that's... he was born, like I said, he's 12. He was born about midway through my writing career. I'd had a few things published and a few Chicken Soup for the Soul story books and some magazines, and a lot of it was humor. But whenever he was 3 years old, before he was three, actually, he was talking. He was putting together complete sentences. He was interacting with people. Whenever he turned three, it was like turning off a light,
uh-huh.
a light switch. He started spending more time to himself, and he just quit talking. Took him to the doctor and found out the most devastating words I've ever heard in my life is, "Your son has autism." And I suspected that he did, but in my mind, I knew he had it because of the symptoms that I had read about. Being a writer, you know, we research things.
Right.
And I did a lot of research on it, but my heart wasn't ready to accept it. And actually, there's something that at first I thought it was me. I thought there was something that I had done, something that I had missed. And I've heard on more than one occasion different moms talking about, you know, receiving a diagnosis about autism, that they think the same thing I do, and there's nothing. It's not the mother's fault. There's nothing you could have done to have prevented it. And I had to come to realize, at first I blamed my writing. If I hadn't have spent so much time on my writing, maybe I would have picked up on it.
Mm-hmm.
So I laid off of writing for a while, and I had to come to realize, like I said, there's nothing that I could have done. It's not my fault. And I needed to be a warrior for my child. I needed to take steps how to get him help and how to make people more aware of this disorder. And that's what I did. And one thing that I did do was write a story called Marks for the... And that's published in Chicken Soup for the Soul, Tough Times, Tough People. And I wrote that so hopefully parents will realize it'll empower them and help them realize that they're not on that journey by themselves. But that was one of the stumbles that I've had.
Mm-hmm.
That there are bad days and there are good days, but there's more good days than there are bad days.
Yeah, anytime that you're told anything's wrong with your child, you know, it really is a tough thing to face. I can remember the trauma when my daughter was initially diagnosed with type 1 diabetes as a teenager. And she was very sick when she was diagnosed. It wasn't a diagnosis that had been easily arrived at. And her blood sugars were beyond, so far beyond dangerous that when we tell people the kind of numbers that we were looking at, they can't even believe she was conscious, let alone alive.
Wow.
So, you know, it's very, very tough to face, you know, problems with a child. And, you know, earlier you talked about being taught by the veterinarian how to give a tetanus shot to your horse. I had long been vaccinating dogs for everything except rabies, because rabies needed to be administered by a licensed veterinarian. And I would never do that one myself. And so I'd done all the other shots because when I worked with dogs, it was considerably cheaper to do your own. And I'll admit, I have accidentally vaccinated myself for parvo. The needle went through the dog's skin and into my hand, and I was starting to inject it before I realized that there was a problem in paradise. But I had only vaccinated dogs. I couldn't stomach doing it to the horses, so I had a friend who couldn't vaccinate her dogs. And she could do horses, but she couldn't do it to her dogs. So we traded. She gave my horses the shots, and I gave her dogs the shots. She went and bought the stuff, and I vaccinated them. And when I needed vaccinations on down on the horses, she did the same thing. It was a great swap, you know. And so when my daughter's diagnosed with diabetes, she wants me to give her a shot. She's still in the hospital at that point. We're going through the education process because I don't care how much you know about diabetes as a disease, it becomes a whole different equation when it's your child.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I'm learning about giving the shots and everything, and they hand me the needle. Nobody had ever taught me how to give a shot to a human. I'm assuming that human skin, because I had seen stitches put in, it looks like pretty tough stuff to me.
Mm-hmm.
I'm assuming it's as tough as a dog's skin.
Mm-hmm.
So she wants the shot in the back of her arm. I stabbed her like I was stabbing a dog. She, you know, one important thing for diabetic children is to, as quickly as possible, because sometimes they're too young to be independent, as quickly as possible, allow them to become independent and giving their own medication and watching their own diet and stuff like that. I have to admit, it was probably the best inspiration for her to immediately take over her own shots, because anything was better than mom doing it. To this day, I have never given her another insulin shot.
Oh, wow.
She's given me one. Well, more than one. She's given it to me, but I've never given it to her again because I also use insulin now. But, yeah, so anybody who's wondering, nope, human skin is not as tough as a dog's. Yeah, she swore that I used her for a dartboard. She about had to be peeled off the ceiling. And no, she was not a very happy camper. But she didn't want me to do it anymore. She wanted to learn how to do it herself. Because, like I said, anything was better than mom doing it. Yeah. We've had some entertaining times over that.
Oh, yeah, and our kids are resilient. They're resilient. I think, and also we have to be resilient as well. One thing that I did write about in one of my humorous parenting stories is with autism, children often do echolalia, which is repeating things that they see on TV. Not so much speech, but it's things that they hear on television, parts of commercials, other things. Well, one day I was sitting in the living room shortly after Joseph was diagnosed, and he is standing there, and we're watching a movie, and he's laughing, and I turned my head to look at him. He has his back to me. He yells bonsai and throws himself backwards. And anyone who has been around a three-year-old knows that their heads are not soft anymore.
No.
They're pretty hard, and whenever bone meets cartilage, the outcome is not going to be good. His head connected with my nose.
Uh-huh.
and you've heard the phrase, stars swam in front of my eyes. They do. Whenever you're socked hard enough in the nose, everything does go black. And stars swim in front of your eyes. And I went, and after I got my vision back, I looked in the mirror, and immediately there are black circles underneath my eyes. He broke my nose.
Now I got my in a dispute with my brother.
Oh, no.
The end result was my nose met with the corner of the table as I was coming upward. Anyhow, I fell like a ton of bricks. Everything went black. I could hear, but I couldn't move. And he was sure that he'd killed me, or I was faking. Something terrible's happened. And it seemed like an eternity. I couldn't even move. Couldn't see, couldn't move. And then I remember finally I creeped upstairs to my bedroom. My nose swelled to immense proportions, but I didn't get any black eyes.
Oh, wow.
Which is strange. But to this day, my nose is slightly crooked, and I got a big hump. You can't really see it, but yeah, it's a little crooked. And yeah, I had my nose broken. I guess I must have been about 14.
Oh, wow.
Fighting with my brother.
Oh.
Yeah, he's only 18 months younger than me, and we'd finally gotten to the point where we're evenly matched in size. Because as any parent or school teacher, anybody who spends a lot of time with kids knows, for a while girls grow faster, noticeably faster, and then all of a sudden the boys catch up and then pass them. And he'd finally got where we were exactly evenly matched. It was all I could do to pin him down when we get in a fight. And then I didn't have any way to torture him. You know, you got to torture your little brother.
Yeah.
Because, you know, he's been picking on you, or he's been doing whatever that's finally provoked this. And you got to torture him. And I would torture him until he would say that he would leave me alone, and then I'd run and then into the bedroom and lock the door. Well, this, you know, in order to torture him, I had long hair, and I would drag it across his face because it irritated the tar out of him. Because it took my hands and my feet to keep him pinned to the floor. Because he played sports too, you know, we were tough kids. And like I said, it was everything I had to keep him pinned to the floor where he couldn't kick me in the back of the head or anything. Well, this particular day, by the time I got him pinned, we ended up underneath the dining room table. I don't know how. Don't ask me to explain how, because that part was kind of a blur, even at the time it was going on. And as I turned loose him, I had to jump back real quick, or he was going to reverse it, and then he was going to, you know, pummel me. And when I hit my head on the back of my head on the table, I had to duck around the table to get out away from him. Well, I didn't move fast enough, so he had grabbed me by the chin, and he's going to push me on over to reverse this on me. Well, as he pushed me on over, the corner of the table edge met with my forehead and the bridge of my nose and separated it there. Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
And it was this incredible explosion of pain. There was no stars swimming. It was just sheer inky blackness. I was so close to being knocked out from the blinding pain. I mean, it was blinding pain at that moment. And it did swell. It was, for about 2 months, I was like a zombie. No facial expressions, because if you frowned, grimaced, anything, it moved skin around your nose, it would hurt so bad. Yeah, no facial expressions.
Oh, yeah. Gosh, that's painful.
Oh, especially as a teenager, because you're teenage girls. I mean, come on. No facial expressions? That means no emotion.
And then, yeah, and that means you can't flirt with the guys.
Well, 14, I will confess, my daughter says I was retarded in my development. I hadn't discovered that guys were good for more than fishing buddies and fighting with. That took a while longer. I was a little slow. They weren't interesting in that way yet. They were still just guys. I was a tomboy, so I was a little slow. I'll admit that, you know. But you couldn't be a teenage girl. I mean, because I had friends that were girls too. No facial expression. I was kind of a clown, and you couldn't make those faces or say those things. You couldn't even roll your eyes without it hurting.
It's painful. I did want to mention that I'm going to change the subject again. I am working on my third Amelia book.
And which is it going to be?
That's going to be Amelia Frump. I'm shortening the title just a little bit. It's going to be Amelia Frump and the Billion Kajillion Dollar Secret. And, again, this third book is special to me in this way. Whenever I was young, before my accident, I loved to draw.
Uh-huh.
And actually, I was quite good at it, to be a little bragging. Or a little braggy, rather. But in this third book, I'm doing my own illustrations. And I'm very excited about it, to do the illustrations all by myself, because this is an ability I just got back pretty recently.
Okay.
And so in this book, Amelia encounters a brand new friend. Or is it a friend? It could be a foe. Because she, in her first book, she had a pretty good relationship with her best friend.
Mm-hmm.
But now a new girl has moved into the neighborhood, and it is threatening Amelia's friendship. And while all this is going on, her teacher announces that he has a secret that he wants to share with the class. And Amelia, in all her imagination, thinks that her teacher has gone on a game show. And that he's won all this money, and that he's going to split it with the class. That's part of the book, how she's going to spend it. But there is another twist to it that involves the new girl. Something happens to the new girl. I don't want to go into a lot of detail because I don't want to give too much away.
We'll all be anxiously looking for it. Now, for anybody who has not read All About Amelia, having read the books, I can say they are absolutely adorable.
Thank you.
Yeah, they're really endearing. Hopefully that you'll still be writing them when my granddaughter is old enough to move beyond hand, fingers, thumb, dum-diddy-dum-diddy-dum-dum-dum. I still remember that one from when my daughter was little. And Marvin K. Mooney, would you please go home?
Oh, yeah.
I still remember a lot of those books. But, yeah, hopefully she'll still be telling her tales when my granddaughter's old enough to enjoy them. At this point in time, she wants things that are rhyming and simple.
Oh, yeah. Exactly. Like Dr. Seuss.
Dr. Seuss, yeah. I have a number of books, and some of them are okay. Some of them she's not too thrilled with. She's crazy about a few things. Trains. Ooh, she loves trains. I've never seen a girl so crazy about trains before. Yeah, she's absolutely crazy about them. And she's been riding a dirt bike already for a year, so she's also crazy about motorcycles.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, she's a busy little girl. So, yeah, you know, someday you'll have to write a book that, you know, either brings in the motorcycles or the trains for Amelia.
I think that is a good adventure for Amelia.
Oh, I can so see her on one of those little dirt bikes. Terrorizing.
I could, too. I could, too.
Yeah, I made the mistake of playing chicken with her one day. She was riding her motorcycle, and I think I was riding her four-wheeler. Okay, so this is a very tiny four-wheeler. I felt like a clown. And she's, you know, we played chicken. Grandma's a bigger chicken. I know how bad it hurts to crash. She doesn't yet. So,
she's fearless.
Oh, she is. She is totally fearless. Hopefully she will never find a reason to not be fearless, but yeah. Grandma is a bigger chicken. She can also outrace me because Grandma's also a bigger chicken about the possibility of tipping over as I ride with the handlebars between my knees and my knees roughly in the vicinity of my ears. Yeah, I feel really, really silly when I ride hers, but I do really good, mean faces. Like I'm serious about this. Yeah.
Oh.
You've got to have a little bit of fun.
Oh, yeah, and that's what memories are made of. She's always going to remember Grandma. riding.
Yeah, very few women of somewhat advanced age are going to climb on the smallest four-wheeler that comes with a gasoline engine and ride it with her three-year-old granddaughter, even in the yard. Yeah, but I will say that, yes, I have done it. I've also let her take me for rides on her motorcycle. But she tells me it won't go fast then. Because grandma's too fat.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, the honesty of a three-year-old.
How cute.
Grandma's too fat. It won't go fast, so we have to go slow.
Aww.
And to be honest, that suits me just fine. Grandma's not a speed demon either. Going fast is not my favorite thing in the world. I guess my day for going fast is past. But we are getting down to the wire. We only have a minute left or so. You want to tell everybody how to find your books again?
Sure, I would love to. You can go to Amazon.com and look for Amelia Frump and her peanut butter loving overactive imagination, or Amelia Frump and her peanut butter loving overactive imagination is cooking up a peanut butter storm. Or you can find it on Dancing with Bear Children's Line. That is DWB Children's Line, all one word, .com. And again, if you do want information, more information about me and all my adventures, you can go to DebbieRopolo.weebly.com.
Okay, folks, there you heard it. Amelia Frump is an absolutely adorable little girl. She's really, really endearing and very imaginative, of course. So I highly recommend the book. And with that, join us again next week as we bring you another story, another voice to tell it, and a whole new topic to talk about. And I hope that tonight's program has brought everyone a little bit more illumination for their personal journey towards truth. And with that, we are out of time. I want to thank everyone for listening, and Debbie, thank you very much for joining us tonight.
Thank you for having me.
And with that, we're out of time. I'm your host, Gia Scott, and good night.